This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Type 2 diabetes, obesity, infant and maternal mortality, and other conditions haunt San Antonio, and these are all indicators of the overall health of our community. What's being done to improve local health before so many get that dreaded diagnosis? And what is San Antonio's overall diagnosis? The SA 2020 report card is out, and we're looking at the grades for public health, fitness, and environmental sustainability. How do energy and water use affect sustainability in the region? In what way is local development impacting the environment? How can employment in green industries grow in San Antonio? As well as we're going to talk about getting more support for local health care and wellness for women and children. We ask you to call in, join our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined again by the great Molly Cox. Welcome back to The Source. It's great to have you here, President CEO of SA 2020.
Thank you.
Molly Cox. Also with us is Andrea Guajardo. She is board member of the Health Collaborative, director of the community engagement for the University of Incarnate Word's School of Osteopathic Medicine. Help me with that one.
Sure.
And Anita Ledbetter is the executive director of Build Green San Antonio. And again, we're talking about the report card, SA 2020, and Molly Cox talk about, there's so many different areas that you focus in on. We have to zero in on a few at a time because we're not going to be able to do it justice.
That's right.
But I don't think there's anything more important than the discussions about public health, particularly here on public radio. And this is a way we're always here about, you know, we have to, a big part of the fight is public awareness. And let's do that today, do some public awareness in these issues. So what are you focusing on in your report with public health? What is the diagnosis?
So I think there's a couple of challenges. First, I want to start very sort of broadly with the idea that when we had these conversations about doing sort of a deeper dive into some of these cause areas, it was very evident to us that we should connect, right, environmental sustainability and health for reasons that our environment affects our health, right? When we promote environmental sustainability, it can positively impact health and fitness. It reduces air pollution levels that cause asthma and other ailments. It improves water quality. It increases access to healthy, fresh local foods. It creates spaces that encourage people to walk, bike, and play. And when we talk about our health in San Antonio, there are so many, like a multitude of things that we can sort of zone in on. There are things that are challenging, and that comes from that space that you were sort of talking about earlier, this idea around obesity rates, maternal and child health, increasing access to health care. And then we've had some really shining moments, like in reducing our teen pregnancy rate, for example. In the instance of reducing teen pregnancy rate, it was evident, and what we have found very specifically is that when we get the people who are most responsible for making change happen, sitting around a table and saying, can we agree on one common goal, positive change happens. And teen pregnancy was a prime example of that. It was originally included that we would reduce the teen pregnancy rate by 15% by the year 2020. That actually happened by the year 2012. Then they said, all right, let's reduce teen pregnancy by 25%. Nope, they did it again by the year 2014. So now they said, let's reduce teen pregnancy by 50%. And we're on track, actually, to make that reduction happen. But I think what you sort of alluded to as you opened the show today is the complexity of all of these things working, which is why, right, in inviting Andrea and Anita here, I think what they bring is sort of some very specific content knowledge. I guess I should say it out loud. Andrea is on the board of the Health Collaborative, but she's also on the SA 2020 board. So I think there's a multitude of sort of complexity that we can talk about today and sort of get very deep into what are the types of policies, what are the types of collaborations, what are the types of things that we need to do to sort of inject some significant changes.
And Andrea, talk about how the perception of change is possible, how important that is as we talk about trying to deal with these conditions that affect San Antonio.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as Molly said, around the area of teen pregnancy, there had to be an intentional on purpose group of people that said, we want to make this change, and it's important because, and they had a list of objectives that said it's important because of environmental, economic development. When we have girls that aren't having kids in school and they're graduating and contributing to the economic development of San Antonio, it's quality of life. These girls are happier if they delay pregnancy later in life, going on to college. So there's lots of reasons why. So once you get that group of people around a table, and then change can happen, and you can, and when you have that many people believing that it can happen, then it actually does, which is why we've seen teen pregnancy dropping for the last 8 years. We're still higher than the national average, but we're still setting goals. We're still getting there. I saw the same thing happen around the area of health insurance enrollment. Back in 2014, when Obamacare was like a what is that kind of a thing, nobody knew what it was, but we knew we had to do it, and the why was because of increasing access to health care. And so then you saw the development of Enroll SA, which is still in existence and still working to enroll people in the health insurance marketplace, but it starts with that perception of change.
And Anita Ledbetter over at Build San Antonio Green, can you talk about, from your point of view, what you see as how sustainability and clean energy and better stewardship of the environment leads to better public health?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think what's really interesting is that the conversation continues to evolve. And part of that is that it's really moved to, I want to say, kind of beyond sustainability into the space of resiliency. And so our health and wellness, our access to, as you were talking about earlier, you know, place changing, you know, healthy foods, all of the things that we've seen kind of happen over the last couple of years all lead us towards resiliency, but these are just the beginning steps. You know, something that we were talking about earlier that I'm very excited about is the upcoming Climate Action and Adaptation Plan here in the city of San Antonio, and I think that this is going to be a great opportunity for all of us to kind of come around and say, how do all of these issues kind of converge? What is their convergence? And so it's a very exciting time. I mean, I look past you know, over the last decade or so and seen our change in renewable energy, for example, here in San Antonio and that effect on the well-being of our residents. I mean, back in 1999, I think that's when they first opened the wind farms. You know, today we have over 1,000 megawatts of wind. I think it probably powers about 240,000 homes in San Antonio, but that's just a fraction. Right? So we can continue to move into that space, and the same with solar. We opened Blue Wing in 2010. Today we have 13 solar farms. But again, these are just the beginning steps. So I think that it's a very important conversation to have. And what I love about this approach is that it really does take, you know, a mixed bag of all of the different people coming from very, very specific knowledge centers, coming together and saying, okay, how are we going to design these platforms to move our community forward? So I think we're just seeing really the beginnings of this.
And a lot of people will talk about more of this after the break, but don't see the connectivity between things like our air quality and respiratory issues, asthma,
absolutely,
things like that we have in our community and mothers have with their children. And also that's connected to low birth weight, premature births, and even infant mortality. All these things are interrelated. And we ask for our callers to call in with your observations and what your goals are. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. What should San Antonio be striving for in our goals for public health and fitness and renewable energy sustainability? 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the SA 2020 Impact Report. We're focusing on environmental sustainability, public health, and fitness. And Molly Cox, looking at some of the bullet points that you have as we look at how goals are being set and then working, trying to achieve those goals, one of them that sticks out that needs a lot of work is reducing obesity in San Antonio. And can you kind of tell us what the goal is and how we're doing on it?
Yeah, so the original goal for decreasing obesity as set by the community was to decrease the adult obesity rate by 10%. So we started at 33.1% in our baseline year in 2011. The goal is actually 29.8%, right? We've actually gone up in our obesity rate. And I think the challenge, right, is to when we focus just on those goals specifically, what we miss is sort of the interconnectedness between these goals and where we want to go, right? If we want to be the healthiest residents in the United States, which was the actual result we want to see, right? San Antonio promotes well-being by providing healthy and affordable food choices. Then we have to start looking at whether or not we're moving in the right direction. And clearly, when it comes to obesity rates, we're not.
And the number to call in if you want to join the conversation, we invite you, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. What do you think about health and wellness and environmental sustainability in San Antonio? And over to Andrea, talk about this statistic here, obesity.
Right. So, I mean, obviously, I think the perception is that if you're an obese person, it's because you made a choice to be an obese person. And there is a space for saying that, yes, our own personal risk behaviors make up for about 40% of whether we're well or we're not. Those are things like, am I a smoker? What kind of physical activity do I participate in? What do I eat? How's my nutrition? But a good 20% of whether or not I'm well has to do with social environmental factors. Do I have sidewalks where I can walk? Is it safe in my neighborhood? Do I have access to quality food that is healthy, that is affordable? Do I have a quality of life and a sense of mental wellness where I want to get out and take care of myself? So although obesity is listed under the health tab of the SA 2020 Impact Report, it is deeply aligned with many of the other tabs that are in this book, including environmental sustainability and how well we're taking care of our green spaces and what kind of access we have to those.
People talk about food deserts, and there's also food swamps, which is like the neighborhood that you live in has only got fried food and other things that really aren't good for you. There's no real good, healthy choice for you in that. And it's kind of a chicken and egg story, because if you don't have a consumer base for people who want to buy those healthy foods in a particular neighborhood, it's hard for someone to go in and pioneer that. So you got to figure out how are you going to make that happen? How do we provide healthy alternatives? And people are working around the clock, you know, single mothers out there, and they come home, they're tired, and you expect them to be able to pull together a healthy meal. What are the solutions? How do we give people the tools to succeed in coming in and bringing this all together? Molly, any ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that you're sort of talking about it holistically, right? And to Andrea's point, which was like, we basically say like, oh, you made bad choices, thereby you are obese.
And the choices you have are the choices that you've been given. Food pyramid is nonsense. People are filling up on carbohydrates because they're cheap, they're easy accessible, and they taste good, and they're not getting the food that they really would fill them up and give them and help them lose weight.
Right, which is, I think, to that point is we have to be better at understanding sort of holistically what are we really talking about, right? The Food Policy Council has been having a really serious conversation about talking to corner stores, like local grocers, right? We have food deserts, so these local corner stores could actually provide a really cool solution by providing healthy options within their corner stores, particularly now that we've been having this conversation about local grocers losing dollars on this new Tobacco 21. They can't sell to kids, right? We've changed that. Well, here's a perfect opportunity, right? Maybe we shift our focus over to healthier options when we're working. So I think the challenge really is more about thinking about not just individual shifts, but systemic shifts. And I don't know that in some cases we've started to do them, and in some cases we need to have a more serious conversation.
All right, I'm going to bring in a caller, and this is Doug Melnick with the Office of Sustainability from the City of San Antonio. And Doug, let me click the button here. And Doug, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, go right ahead.
So, so I just wanted to, follow up on some of the things that the City of San Antonio is doing, and I think Anita hit, the nail on the head with the Climate Action and Adaptation Plan. You know, the reason why that's so important is when we start looking at climate change, it's going to impact everything that we are having issues with now, whether it's public health or air quality or our environment. So that's a big thing that we really need the public to be engaged with. In terms of air quality, we've seen our ozone numbers numbers come down, but they're not where they need to be. So, you know, the city's continuing our Breathe Today, SA Tomorrow campaign. Our Transportation and Capital Improvements Department is going to be partnering with us to look at transportation demand management opportunities to provide people as many opportunities to get out of their single occupancy vehicle. And TCI is also going to be working with us to look at low impact development. How do we improve water quality and reduce urban heat island through seeing if there's ways of minimizing the amount of pavement there is around the city.
And so the report that's going to be coming out soon, talk more about that. And what will this set target goals?
Sure. So the Climate Action and Adaptation Plan is it's under the banner of SA Climate Ready. We're just really sort of gearing up now. We're going to be holding a lot of public engagement through the next year to 18 months. And what it's going to do, there's two components. It's going to set very specific targets around reducing greenhouse gas emissions, which contribute to climate change, as well as it really adds to local air quality impacts, and really develop a pathway to meet those reduction targets. And the other part is climate adaptation. How do we prepare for the climate impacts that we're experiencing now or those that are projected in the future? And that could be extreme heat, increased vector-borne diseases, and increased flooding. So it's really going to be a good roadmap for the community.
Well, one thing I'm wondering about is when San Antonio can, what kind of target it can set to become coal-free. I know that's a CPS Energy thing, but CPS Energy is owned by the city of San Antonio. It's a municipal-owned utility. And if there should be a community discussion about not emissions-free, you know, they can still do with the – that's later down the road with burning of natural gas, but coal-free. There's no such thing as clean coal, regardless of what you've heard from certain people. And so does San Antonio need to put a dime on where it wants to when is it going to be coal-free?
Sure, and that's all part of the discussion. I think part of what we'll be doing is going through various scenarios with the community and stakeholders and discuss pros and cons. I think there's a cost associated with everything, but we need to balance that with the benefits. So, you know, the line to, you know, a coal-free or carbon-free San Antonio doesn't necessarily need to be a straight line. When we look at most cities across the country and the world that are working on this, it's more of a moderate approach to actually meet that target. I think we just need to have an open dialogue about what the community's goals are and make sure that everybody's on the same page before drawing that line in the sand.
All right, Doug Melnick, thanks so much. I appreciate you calling in from the City of San Antonio Sustainability Office. And Anita Ledbetter, Executive Director of Build San Antonio Green, can you add to that?
Yeah, I feel that what's important here is that we're finally at the place where we're going to set a goal. I think that we need to set a goal when we're going to do this, and then we can develop a strategic plan around how we're going to get there over time, and then we can kind of back out when that will happen, right? I think that, but having the goal is probably the most important. I mean, when we look at our movement in renewable energy technologies, it has been great. It has been fast. I mean, just in the last decade, we've risen to be number one in Texas on several fronts. And I think that we can continue to go down that path now. And that's because we set a goal, right? And then we figured out how we were going to get there. But I think one of the most important things, and this has been a reoccurring theme with all of our conversation today, and that is equity, right? Time, access, and really designing these systems and platforms where we can have the greatest amount of participation. Now, and that's something that the utility, CPS Energy, has been doing. I think a good example of that is the Simply Solar program. You know, many in the beginning we said, you know, we want solar, and at first we just had a private rebates. But if our goal is to say we want everyone in San Antonio to have solar and have access to solar, well, not everyone is going to be able to buy it. Right. So then we diversified our strategy, and then we said, OK, great. We're also going to build solar farms. Today we have 13 of them, and we're also going to come out with community solar and solar hosting. So we have options because not everyone can buy it on their house. Not everyone can afford to do that. And so we had to diversify our strategy. And so I think no matter the roads that we go down, I'm very excited that we're working in that spirit of how we're going to bring everybody forward and not just the people that can afford to do it.
And Molly Cox, in the SA 2020 report card, y'all have these assessments, and you look at the goals, but you also have calls to action.
We do.
And particularly when it comes to public health and to environmental sustainability, taking personal responsibility is really how we're going to get change done.
Yeah, you know, I think the challenge for when you look at something like the SA 2020 Impact Report is the, I'm going to use the word overwhelmation of the amount of information that's in there, why it's important to you, the results that we're trying to achieve, and how do you boil that down to a space where I move? I want to do something. So we do have calls to action within the report, but we also developed 300 ways to make an impact because, you know, hashtag tricentennial. So there's a, if you go to sa2020.org/300, if you are particularly interested in how you can help in environmental sustainability, you can click that cause area and we give you 25, 26 different ways that you could potentially impact the goals that we set for our community. Same thing in health and in any of the cause areas as well.
And do you wanted to add to that? I saw you, Andrea.
Well, I mean, it's just I'm listening to all of the amazing, innovative stuff, and I don't want to your listeners or for us to appear tone deaf in that when we're talking about how we want solar energy, that we still have a lot of people in San Antonio who don't have running water and
roofs.
Their electricity is often turned off. They have utility insecurity or housing insecurity or inadequate housing. And so I just want to acknowledge that although we want to move forward at light speed, there are a lot of systems that are still in place. And we talk about equity and what we'll call racial and class disparities. But I really kind of think that's a misnomer because it's not because of someone's race or because they're a class that's a biological reason why there is a disparity. Those disparities were created by systems that have been in place for a long, long time. So the face that you saw me make was just to acknowledge that it is still a tale of two cities in a lot of ways, that we really want to move forward in environmental sustainability and all of the innovative things that we're doing. But we really do still have to concentrate on just getting the most vulnerable of our city up to a different standard.
Well, and I think to that point too, Andrea, like the Healthy Bear Plan, right, very specifically addresses those types of disparities, specifically, right, when you think about people who live on the south side of San Antonio and people who live on the north side of San Antonio having a 20-year potential age gap in when they how long they live.
Like where you live is going to impact your lifespan.
Yeah, I mean, your social determinants of health are exactly, I mean, that's sort of what Andrew was talking about earlier. Where you live has a drastic shift on how long you live, the quality of life that you have, and we have to be willing to actually have, again, to the point we were making earlier, we have to be willing to have the conversation of, if we believe that we want to be the healthiest residents in the United States, it is not going to be, hey, stop eating a Milky Way that's going to get us there. It's going to be in systemic change of us understanding that everyone's success is our collective success.
Sure, but we do have pockets of San Antonio that if we can identify them, and we do it by zip code typically, that we can find out where these problems are systematic and very high. And those are that's actually the low-hanging fruit. And we can deal with these people who are really need the help and assistance, and that actually improves the overall score for the entire city. Because we do have a tale of two cities in San Antonio, but we do have to lump it up in one number when we look at these reports like you did with the SA 2020 Impact Report. We got some callers here online. We will get them on the air when we come back from the break. What have you and your family done to live a more healthy, sustainable lifestyle? Do you think there are enough healthy alternatives in San Antonio? And what's an environmental responsible option for San Antonio residents to adopt? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break.
San Antonio's poet laureate drew upon the art of the written word to create her signature project.
Poetry is an art of precision, and that to kind of think about that we are named for the saint of lost things, for the person that we call to, seemed too good to not try to explore more fully.
What drove Jenny Brown to highlight San Antonio's hidden history through art and the written word? Next time on Fronteras. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about SA 2020 Impact Report, Environmental Sustainability, Local Health, and Fitness. We invite you to call into the conversation, 210-614-8980. And Pamela, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm a master fitness specialist in San Antonio. I've been here for 30 years working with clients of all different kinds of concerns. And I just wanted to add to the conversation that so many people, part of what I have to do in the very beginning to help people be healthier is to educate them about nutrition, because there's so much confusion out there. And so many people are not getting the right nutrition because they're either doing these very, very low-carb diets where they're not incorporating good fats into their diet, or they just don't know what to do. They don't know how to go about it. And the second thing is, a lot of times I have to mentally get to them and understand why they're not healthy or they're very overweight. And a lot of times they are food addicts. And food addicts, you have to handle a totally different way than anyone else, because I've kind of coined the phrase, nothing feels better to these people. Nothing feels better than taste.
Okay, Pamela, thank you for the call. These are not local issues. This is a national situation. I mean, obesity is a big deal, no pun intended, across the nation. And that's because we're all eating the same things. They're not always good for us. And there's a lot of confusion about nutritional guidelines. A lot of people aren't making enough money and they have to eat. And it's when what's available to them is not always the best choice. So Andrea, I was wondering if you could add to that.
Yeah, I think from a bigger picture, if we're looking at obesity is a major cause of some more complex health issues like high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, CHF, all of the things that people die from. So I think, at the Health Collaborative, the Health Collaborative is the one that creates the community health needs assessment and looking at all of these disparities. And I'm sure everyone's seen the graphs on TV and we talk about life expectancy. But one of the philosophies that we have there is that the best way to prevent or to help treat diabetes or prevent diabetes in our community is to not create diabetics. And so we have to go further upstream. We have to look at children and their how they're being taught to eat. We see a huge jump in obesity from kids that are from 4 years old to the 10 to 17 year old age range. So we've got like 14% obesity rate in younger kids that jumps up to about 35% in teenagers. So we need to understand what happens and what are kids doing at that point in their lives between 4 and 10, is it physical activity? Is it their access to green spaces? Is it the activity they're getting in school? Is it their school lunch? Is it home? Is it a food desert? There are lots of different factors that go into that. But I think the best thing that we can do to address obesity in our city is to take a look at our younger population so that we don't create obese people who become diabetic later in life.
Well, and I think that I love that. I've never heard you say that phrase before, where it's like the best way to stop diabetes is don't let people, right, like stop it at the beginning.
I have to give credit to Dr. Bob Ferrer, who's our former board chair for the Health Collaborative. I totally
so don't
stole
become
that.
A diabetic.
Right.
Don't become
right.
a diabetic.
But I think the challenge, right, and I think to that point, is what we end up doing is not paying attention to sort of these upstream, downstream spaces, right? Increasing access to healthcare allows potentially for getting somebody in to see a medical doctor. There's other pieces, too, around diabetes. And I think challenging for us is we always, to go back sort of to this major space of like, don't be diabetic, don't be obese.
That
right?
sounds glib.
Agreed. And so I'm saying, I think that there's a more systemic challenge also in understanding how diabetes also impacts like multiple other things. An example, right? The SA 2020 Health Dividend shows that a 1% decrease in the San Antonio metro region's diabetic population, it's about 1,700 less people, could result in a savings of $16.1 million in medical and associated costs.
Wow.
So that's not even, we're not even, there's an economic benefit to helping people be healthier, right? So having these conversations has such far-reaching implications.
Right. So if we can get people to realize that there's a connection between drinking sugary drinks, you know, pop and all these other and things, that is going to lead you down the road. That's going to give you the insulin spikes. It's going to make you insulin resistant. It's going to help you become more likely to be diabetic. And people have got to realize this. The sweet tea and all this other stuff, not a good choice.
Well, and also that that nothing happens in a silo to an individual. And I always like to use the example of health insurance coverage. The average person in Texas pays about $1,800 more on their policy in premiums because of the cost of unreimbursed care that hospitals have to provide for the uninsured. So for the person that says, well, I have health insurance through my employer, the uninsured rate does not concern me. It absolutely does. It has right. an economic impact on everyone. And so if we extrapolate that philosophy out to health, it absolutely impacts every single person, regardless of your socioeconomic status.
Okay, another caller. This is Maggie. And hi, Maggie. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. I love this topic, and I wanted to talk about yoga lifestyle as a potential platform to bring this into discussion for all these citywide initiatives on making our community healthier. I'm one of the organizers for the annual, it's a free yoga conference that we have in honor of the International Day of Yoga in June of every year. And this year, our focus is yoga for warriors. And our belief is that yoga as a platform teaches sort of building community, of course, by coming to a class. And then when you're in association with people that have fitness activities or that talk about healthy eating, I don't know what the statistic is, but I know that something like 60%, there's a 60% chance of being obese if you have a social group, you know, with people that are obese. And so I don't know if the opposite corollary would also apply, that if you kind of spend more time with people that are fitness oriented or come to these free health and wellness events, that you might then pick up just new ideas, new ways to look at the connection of what is my responsibility of my current mind and body state, and how can I actually affect my choices, that I actually have a choice of what food do I eat.
Okay, Maggie, thank you for the call. I've got other callers here. I'm going to get Jim on the air. And Jim, welcome to The Source. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to comment on a healthy fast food option right here in San Antonio. There's a burger joint called Earth Burger, very near the corner of Blanco and 410, that does a great business. They have great veggie burgers. They have veggie chicken, veggie fish, and they even have ice cream with no milk in it and milkshakes with no milk.
All right. Jim, thank you for bringing that up. And you wanted to say something, Andrea?
Yeah, all of these things. I practice yoga. It's a great way that I participate in my own fitness. And yes, there are some really great establishments, even fast food establishments, that offer healthy choices. But I think the point that we're all trying to make here is that some of these things are inaccessible to some parts of our city. Transportation continues to be one of the biggest barriers to to accessing some of these services. And, you know, I'm at the UIW Medical School at Brooks. And so on the south side, we see that, you know, there's no grocery store for many of the families that we work with down there. And so even though there are these choices that we could make, again, like you said, we make the best choice out of the choices that we're given. If we don't have the transportation to avail ourselves of these services, it's difficult to make that choice.
And so, Molly Cox, you're not saying we don't have enough fast food, healthy fast food. We're just talking about overall. I mean, this is a huge systematic situation imposed on San Antonio. It's going to take more than more drive-through windows serving alternative burgers.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's sort of a yes and approach, right?
Yeah.
Yes, we
I mean,
should
it's great
be.
That we have that option.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for people
and we'll
who
bend
are
over backwards to promote yoga when we can.
Absolutely. And to be fair, right?
Oh, I see what you
did.
There.
Yeah, I see what you did. It was a downward dog. I think what we've got to be able to do, right, is have all of these things coming at us at once. Free fitness in the parks are amazing, right? We can take advantage of those if we've got a park near us, if we can get to the park, right? So I think it's understanding sort of systemically, it's both of these approaches. Yes, we need to be aware of fitness and we need to eat better. Yeah. And also systemically, are we helping create solutions?
Okay, so here's another caller, and this is Julie. And Julie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I listen to NPR every morning, and I have heard over the past few weeks a lot of talk about how people in certain zip codes live longer than people in other zip codes. And I don't, it's kind of interesting to me that the implication seems to be that, oh, well, if you live in 78209, you're going to live longer than someone who lives on the South Side. I don't think it's the zip code. I think it's a socioeconomic issue. I think it's a matter of poverty and, in many cases, ignorance. And it just seems silly to me to talk about the zip code. It's sort of like a man that heard that all accidents occur within 3 miles of home, so he moved.
Right.
You know,
So I get what you're saying, Julie. And so it's not the actual zip code that's causing the health disparity. We can renumber all the zip codes, and it's not going to change anyone's health outcome. It's because that's the only classification that we have. Zip codes were created to deliver the mail. They weren't there to try to come up with good ways to classify portions of a city. And it is an easy way for us to try to break down what are outcomes for certain individuals in certain ways, because the people put down their zip codes when they fill out certain forms. We're able to do that data analysis in that manner. But the ignorance part that you bring up may be more likely to the ignorance of the policymakers who aren't paying attention to this data that's staring right in their face, that certain areas are affected by certain conditions in a terrible way. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. We've got some more callers here who want to join the conversation. Julie, I appreciate your phone call. Thanks for listening. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about SA 2020's Impact Report, specifically the sections about environmental sustainability, health, and fitness. And you're invited into the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. Anita over at Build San Antonio Green, can you talk a little bit about how environmental sustainability can lead to better health outcomes? I can imagine if someone says, you know, if I do ride my bike to work or whatever more often, you know, do that for a little while and you're actually going to see better health outcomes.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, on the highest level, it's really about connectivity, you know, and I'm going to talk a little bit about like a B-cycle bike share as an example. And our transportation options. You know, when we think about having commuter systems, why don't we think about having healthy transportation options that are easy for people to use? You know, that's one of our objectives at BikeShare, is to really make sure that, you know, we transition from kind of a downtown or tourist kind of system in the beginning to really a system that is here for as a transportation option for the people of San Antonio, where you can walk to the B-cycle, get on one, get off, get out, get on the bus, and go to your destination. And so I think it's really about, like, you know, understanding that connection. I think that it's really, again, I'm so fascinated by this intersection of sustainability and health, because it really is so deeply connected on really every level, especially in regard to our improving our air quality index. So I think it's really also about understanding the access. You know, we were talking about this during the break. You know, one of the reasons why I've kind of so passionate about these is that I grew up here in San Antonio. I grew up in deep in the Southeast Side, and we didn't have bike share at that time, and I couldn't afford a bike. I used to have to walk about a mile and a half back in, you know, very long time ago to the bus stop. That took a lot of time to do that, but I really had no other option. Right. And so then once I got on the bus, you know, I rode that down to St. Philip's. I had to walk many blocks, 15 blocks or so, to go to St. Philip's. So the time and the effort there, it was difficult. But I did it honestly because I couldn't afford a car at that time. Right. So it's easy to say, hey, somebody should go ride their bike, or hey, go ride the bus. But you know what? Try to live a day in the life of someone that you're trying to target. And I think that there we can understand that on a deeper level. Today it's a lot different. You know, I remember, again, growing up in the South Side, Southeast Side. When I got older, I moved closer to downtown, and man, it was like a whole different world, because all of a sudden I had like Whole Foods and I had, you know, the bus system right there. It was just a really, really different world. And so I think, again, all of these things are very, very connected. And when we think about designing these systems for everyone to use, for the people, that's a very different thing than saying we're just trying to increase public transportation.
Right. But also the sustainability word is an important word and can apply to everything that we're talking about. If we you can try these big moonshots, if it's just one big effort and then you run out of gas, and that's not going to be good enough. It has to be something that's consistent, that we're able to stick with, and that a lot of people can adopt. And so we're talking about marginal adjustments to our actual daily routines. If people can say, I used to do this, it's not helping my health, I'm going to do this. And it's just a little bit of adjustment, and now it becomes part of your lifestyle, and now you've got a better health outcome. And Andrea, over at the Health Collaborative, I mean, is that something that is applicable to all demographics?
I think so, yeah. I mean, because I don't think there's any sector that has literally no choices to make. I think there are things going on, and this is one of the things SA 2020 says, is that we're very rich in resources, but we're poorly networked. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, at the Health Collaborative, there are several different programs about Healthy Me, Healthy We, making incremental changes. The Community Health Improvement Plan, that is a product or a function of the Community Health Needs Assessment. Yes. The answer to your question is yes, but I think that we as a city need to make a more coordinated effort to recognize through an equity lens all of the needs of every sector.
Well, let me ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
And does it make much of a difference if I pick corn over flour?
No.
The same thing.
I mean, the important
quantity of it.
I'm sure the nutritionists out there will give you some nutritional breakdown, but I mean, no, not really. I think that in some cases there's a moderative behavior that you know, to moderate what you eat, but corn or flour, not really. I mean, there's also a cultural difference between corn, flour, tortilla, and what's really goes on a taco. So that's a whole other conversation.
Okay, that's another show. Yeah. We'll get into that. All right, let's get John on the air. John, thanks for calling in. You're on the air in The Source.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm aware in Chicago they had some taxes on sugary drinks for a while, and there was controversy about that. I'm not promoting that here, but I'm wondering what in the city of San Antonio or even at the state level there might be some regulations or other enhancements that the government's trying to make to improve the healthy living. Thank you.
All right, John, thank you for the call. And so, Andrea.
Yeah, Sugar Pact is actually a campaign that is under the umbrella of the Health Collaborative, and it is it's not an initiative that's intended to regulate or to tax like some other cities have done. Really, what it is to inform people about the amount of sugar that they're taking in. For example, if you drink a soda, sugary soda, a 12-ounce can has 16 packets of sugar in it, and a lot of people don't know that. So,
yeah, but people, you tell them that, says, well, that sounds like a lot of sugar, and it sure tastes good. They don't understand how much that's going to impact their health. What's that going to do to their insulin and it happens inside their body?
Right. And I think that goes back to helping people understand that yes, while you're a relatively young person, you know, diabetes rates, again, like in children, they jump from the 30 to 44 years of age. 44 plus diabetes rates nearly double among adults. And so there's something that goes on with the body that says, yes, you can tolerate some behaviors for a certain period of time, but at some point you're going to create a diabetic. Again,
right.
So go further upstream, don't become a diabetic.
No one in San Antonio is talking about a soda tax.
No.
But we can probably do, Molly, you know, public awareness.
Well, I think there's, yeah, for sure, public awareness. I mean, most recently, Metro Health we just had this conversation about Tobacco 21, raising the age of buying cigarettes to the age of 21. That was a very specific, targeted campaign to help in health and behavioral risks down the road. But I think it's a complex issue. So it's exactly what you're saying. We need a combination, right, of efforts. Community investment, we need public policy. We need to engage the community on changes that need to occur. And to be fair, we've been talking mostly about physical health. And because, again, it's such a complex issue, we haven't even gotten into mental health, right? Where one in five children are struggling with a mental health that becomes mental health disorder that becomes one in four adults that struggle.
Undiagnosed depression is a major
just
issue.
Just across the board, right? It's just a complex issue, which is why I think you're kind of seeing, man, there's so many different ways, and why environmental sustainability and health and mental health and exercise and eating right and making sure there's access to bikes and other areas and parks is so interconnected. And I think that's the conversation that we want to keep driving home, is that all of these things need a larger focus.
And Anita Ledbetter, what do you want people to take away from the environmental sustainability chapter in the SA 2020 Impact Report?
Well, I think what's important here is that, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, people like us, our job is to come together to think about all the people that are out there working that don't have time or maybe don't have specialization in these areas, right? And so I think that, you know, one of the things I just want people to know is that, you know, you're probably already doing some things already, and people aren't aware of that. You know, and I think also sometimes people are afraid. Like, people ask me all the time about recycling. You know, I wonder why are more people are not recycling. Some people are just aren't sure. They're like, oh, well, I have the recycling can, and I try sometimes, but sometimes I'm just not sure. You know, and so I think it's you know, look at the things that you can do, and then we change, like as you've been saying, we change slowly over time, and so you're probably already doing a lot of things that you can, and it's exciting time.
Yeah, and if I can jump in, you were talking about incremental change, right? We are seeing incremental change in our recycling
marginal
rates.
Adjustments over a long period of time equals a big change.
Right. I mean, in 2010, 19%. That was our percent of waste recycled, right? And now we're seeing 33% of our waste being recycled. We are seeing incremental change. It is occurring. So I think to
and
that
the
point.
Composting.
Yeah, composting has also gone up incrementally. So I think it's also in paying attention to that space.
And Andrew Wajardo, over the board member for the Health Collaborative, what's your big takeaway here?
I think everyone has to be, you know, is mostly worried about their own individual health, but I think on a larger
families.
And their families, obviously. But I think when we talk about the larger picture of San Antonio, we really need to talk about advocacy, because there are policymakers that are creating legislation, good and bad, that influence the health of our community. Diego Bernal's school lunch bill has been amazing and has already seen great results in school districts. But also, you know, the funding of Medicaid, whether or not we're going to adequately fund other public health programs, how we're measuring data.
The waivers at the state level.
Absolutely. Community health centers are at risk of losing their funding as we speak. Their funding has not been renewed. So organizations like CentraMed and CommuniCare, who take care of hundreds of thousands of people each year, are at risk of losing their funding. So I think that we as a city need to talk to our elected officials. We need to advocate. We need to make phone calls so that we can be our brother's keeper, in a sense, so that we are improving the health of our community at policy level.
And so, Molly Cox, talk about, you know, these chapters in this report, and there's good news and bad news. It's a mixed bag.
Uh-huh.
But what do you want? I mean, we have to focus on these things of reducing obesity and improve maternal and child health. And these are not good indicators. We got to what can be done?
Well, I think Andrea mentioned something very important, right? Which is the sort of advocacy, getting involved, talking to policymakers so we can talk more systemically. Earlier, we heard about the Climate Action Plan, you know, sasustainabilityplan.com. You can find out more about that and get involved locally on how you might help in that space. And then there's also the Community Health and Equity Committee that is currently within our city. It's chaired by Councilwoman Ana Sandoval. You can show up to those places as well and find out how you may also advocate for better health at public health policy.
And a big step is getting a clear-eyed view of what is actually happening in San Antonio, putting a number to these areas and being able to try and figure out how are we going to deal with this situation and get the community involved. I want to thank all of our guests this afternoon. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.